Today's Journey to Wellness in Indian Country is made possible by the University of Minnesota Medical School Duluth Campus, educating medical students dedicated to serving rural Minnesota and American Indian, Alaska Native communities. This morning, we're talking about a book that is coming out in just a matter of weeks. It's called Standing with Standing Rock, and one of the co-editors is on the phone with us this morning. Jaskiran Dillon joins us this morning from Philadelphia. Hey, Jaskiran, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me.
You know, I'm curious. We share so much of our daily lives and important things these days with a phone in their pocket. Everybody has a recorder. Everybody has a video camera. Everybody has a still camera. Everybody can be a journalist in essence. So at the time that the Standing Rock protests were going on, so many people were sharing minute by minute what was going on. Were you thinking at the time already about a book, given our ability to really capture what's going on kind of minute by minute, or was that something that you had to kind of get out of that moment in order to consider?
Well, there were so many of us that were actually in the encampments and then doing organizing and support work back in our home cities when we couldn't actually be at Standing Rock to support the Standing Rock Sioux struggle against the Dakota Access Pipeline. So I think it was both. I think there were many of us that thought this moment needs to be documented. It's so significant in terms of a history of Indigenous resistance, and it also tells us so much about the history of United States that is often left out of textbooks and social studies classrooms and history classrooms when young people are being educated in K-12. So we really sort of, there was a group of us that really thought it would be important to document it in the form of an edited collection. And it sort of first took shape in a short blog series that Nick Estes and I co-edited for Cultural Anthropology, and then from there grew in to the larger edited collection that's going to be released in August with University of Minnesota Press.
How many authors? There's a huge paragraph of well, mm-hmm. I shouldn't say authors. I should say contributors. And folks are contributing poetry and prose and essays and photography and interviews. And the list kind of goes on and on. About how many folks contributed to the book?
So there are 30-plus contributors for the edited collection, and you're absolutely right. It sort of covers a range of mediums in terms of sharing stories about the struggle against the Dakota Access Pipeline that was waged by the Standing Rock Sioux. So we wanted people to sort of be able to enter this collection from multiple vantage points. So if you were a photographer, you could have the visual aspect. If you were someone interested in poetry and literature, you could access it that way. If you were interested in academic pieces, there's something for you too. If you wanted to hear more from the founders of the movement, you could do that as well by reading the interviews. So it is intended to be able to be used across a range of settings. So you can use it in a university, but you could also use it in a K-12 classroom or in a community organization or in a protest camp.
One of the things that I had to learn, I suppose I kind of figured it out, or I had perhaps reflected on it at some point after my growing up. But we've talked about it a lot on this show, about who writes history. And usually it's the quote-unquote winners. Mm-hmm. Frequently, of course, it's the dominant culture. It's white guys, to kind of shortcut it.
Yeah.
And here is an opportunity for folks who were right there, again, reporting minute by minute, to provide a history and an account of what was going on. Every account, I would imagine, is subjective to a certain extent, but here is an opportunity for people to say, here is what's going on, and at least get, this is what was going on from our perspective, out there, mm-hmm. into the mainstream. To me, that seems just really, really huge. And that seems to mark a real turning point, not just for Native America, but perhaps for every group that has felt hey, you're not telling what's going on here. You're not looking at things from our perspective, and you're only telling part of the story. Is that right?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. One of the things that we were actually, that was very important to us when we were curating this edited collection, was to lift up and raise up the voices and perspectives and standpoints of Lakota and Dakota people from the region that were you know, whose homelands upon which this entire resistance against the Dakota Access Pipeline took place. And you're absolutely right. This is sort of a pushback and a very different approach to thinking about writing history, to offering perspectives on a social issue in the moment, and to really provide an opportunity for Indigenous people to be able to speak on their own behalf, to be able to write and create representations on their own behalf. There's a terrible history, both in academia and in journalism, of writing other people's stories, which, as you say, comes with its limitations and often bias and embedded issues of racism. And so this is a chance for people to actually hear from a range of people associated with the movement who are actually Indigenous, many of whom are Lakota and Dakota, about their experiences and really their political claims to sovereignty.
Where does the protest stand? Am I correct in remembering that the pipeline went through after all?
Yes, the pipeline was completed, and there have been, as the Standing Rock Sioux predicted and their allies predicted, there have been multiple spills and leakages already from the Dakota Access Pipeline. So I think it's important to note that while the formal encampment may be over, there is ongoing resistance to both the pipeline and to other pipeline projects and other extractive projects that are linked with the Dakota Access Pipeline. And so this is the significance of the struggle sort of lives on in multiple ways. And I would not say that the struggle that is over, it's far from over.
It seems to me that many times the stories become, there's this big protest, then the pipeline goes through and some people, many people, move on with their lives. But it seems not just with regard to pipelines or some of these projects on Native land, but it seems that with a lot of these projects across the board, that the real story is, well, did the accidents, did the spills happen the way they said they were going to, or didn't they? Do you have a sense that another book or another collection of stories and documentations of what has happened since the pipeline went in is another untold story that perhaps would need to be told it somewhere down the line?
Absolutely. I mean, I think because these, as you say, these struggles are not just one moment in time, but they're actually one point of resistance along a long continuum of resistance, that it's important that we don't close off the opportunity for people to continue to share their experiences and continue to inform the public, both the white settler public, but also Indigenous communities and their allies, people that are fighting similar kinds of struggle in other places, about what comes next. What does it look like afterwards, right? How do communities think about what it means to have these kinds of pipelines running through their tribal lands, right? How do they resist these things through ongoing strategies and collaborations and coalitions that they build with other communities and organizations and people? I think that's absolutely essential. And I know that it's work that both Nick and I are hoping to continue.
Tell me one final question. Tell me a little bit about how you feel the people of Standing Rock. I've been to Standing Rock. I was there 30 years ago. And it was a place where definitely the poverty was crushing. These were not people, I think, that were taken very seriously, certainly by the white dominant culture, but they drew the attention of the entire world. How do you feel that the people who are still there on Standing Rock, the storm built, the storm broke over their heads, the storm was there, and then the storm kind of drifted away from them a little bit. How has that changed them?
I mean, I think there's some incredible stories that you're going to read if you pick up the edited collection about how this kind of movement activated, in particular, young people to really think about their history in the country that has come to be identified as the United States and their relationship to the land, the power they hold to be able to both launch movements, social movements like the resistance against the pipeline, and also to be able to speak up on behalf of their communities. And so for me, that is a tremendous accomplishment and a huge success of a movement like this, to be able to activate young people, to be able to speak up about their territories and their communities, and to be able to demand change that they absolutely and rightfully deserve.
Well, it was an incredible moment in time. It will be incredible to read the book and to have all of these different stories. I would imagine that by the time you get to the end of the book, they've sort of distilled into a certain sense of what happened. But again, to have those voices reporting live from the front what was going on, what a marvelous gift for all of us. And I suppose we're kind of already looking forward to your next project. Just Kieran, thank you so very much for joining us this morning. It was wonderful to talk with you.
Likewise, thanks for having me. And thanks for promoting the book. We really hope that it reaches people.
Jess Kieran Dillon is the co-editor with Nick Astes of a book called Standing with Standing Rock. It will be out next month. It's published by the University of Minnesota Press. Today's Journey to Wellness in Indian Country is made possible by the University of Minnesota Medical School, Duluth Campus, a national leader in improving health care access and outcomes in rural Minnesota and American Indian Alaska Native communities.